quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking peoples and the Squamish-speaking peoples. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded territories of the Halkomelem-speaking peoples and the Hunkaminam-speaking peoples. And at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. I'm Leslie, and today's episode of Typically Tuesdays is about heinous loser J.K. Rowling. And that's it. I know it sounds kind of harsh, it sounds kind of mean, but I don't like her. I don't like her because she is an incredibly transphobic bigot. I don't like her because she is, like, just ridiculously uninformed, disinformed, ignorant, and frankly, I don't like using this word, but frankly, stupid about sexuality and queerness. And I don't like her because I don't think that she is actually a feminist. And I wouldn't have any trouble if she weren't a feminist, but she is convinced that she is. And it scares me that she does. And today's show might make you uncomfortable, but I am going to be essentially talking about why maybe you should consider dropping Harry Potter from your bookshelf and not gifting it to people in your life and not playing the video game. Just like completely consider why you should emotionally and financially divest from Harry Potter and that franchise. And because I'm going to be talking about heinous loser J.K. Rowling, in the words of the magical Pedro Pascal, I'm also going to be talking about transphobia, specifically transmisogyny. In several instances, I'm going to be talking about the UK ruling on the supposed definition of women. I am going to be talking about queerphobia, specifically acephobia, so discrimination against asexual people, and also oppression against asexual people. And I am going to be talking about misogyny and also mentioning gender-based violence. If any of that is something that you don't want to listen to, I welcome you to join me again next week on Typically Tuesdays, where we're going to be talking about things that are more positive. But that's not going to be the episode today. It's going to be critical. It's going to be kind of harsh. It's going to be dunked in reality, and it's gonna hope I'm gonna try to give it some levity in tone at some points, but it is going to be an intense episode. So take care of yourself, and if you're ready and strapped in, let's start off with today's playlist, which is an anti J.K. Rowling pro trans playlist. We're going to start off with the Nosebleeds with Fascist Pigs. Oh yeah, this episode, also the playlist, it's really not subtle. Enjoy! We'll be right back.
Is bird note. You might think the first bird species that humans raised in captivity would be a relatively small one, like a chicken. But evidence suggests that people in New Guinea reared the cassowary, often called the world's deadliest bird, as much as 18,000 years ago, long before the domestication of chickens. The remains of cassowary eggs and bones at archaeological sites in New Guinea indicate that people gathered the eggs, possibly allowing the more mature eggs to hatch into chicks. All cassowaries possess fearsome, sharp toes that have been known to kill or seriously injure humans. While northern and southern cassowaries can reach heights of 5 feet or more, the dwarf cassowary stands just 3.5 feet tall. Researchers suspect that by collecting nearly hatched cassowary eggs, probably from the dwarf cassowary, people could have easily reared their chicks. Today in New Guinea, captive cassowary chicks become imprinted on their human carers, allowing people to raise them to adulthood. Cassowaries may not be the cuddliest of birds, but people found a clever way to live beside them long ago. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel. Want more Bird Note sounds, images, and stories delivered straight to your inbox? Subscribe to our weekly newsletter for a preview of the week's shows, stories, and stunning photos every Friday morning. Visit birdnote.org to sign up today.
Thank you. invited.
To Typically Tuesdays. My name is Leslie, and you just heard Cole Pulis featuring the voice of Hunter Schafer on a track off of the Transa album. The track was called Under the Shadow of Another Moon, Dark Night. Before that, we started the show off today with a track by the Nosebleeds called Fascist Pigs. And today I'm going to be talking about another fascist pig, who is J.K. Rowling. Now, the reason why, I guess, I wanted to tackle this topic of, like, transphobia and general bigotry by talking about J.K. Rowling and the Harry Potter franchise is because I felt like that was a good starting place. I realize that there are not a lot of people that have any clue about what's happening with J.K. Rowling these days, and they assume that she continues to be the beloved children's book author of the Harry Potter series. But let me just share a little bit of news. As you may or may not know, the Supreme Court, the UK Supreme Court, recently ruled that trans women do not fall within the legal definition of women under the country's equality legislation. And this is information pulled right out of a New York Times article by Lizzie Dearden called UK Top Court Says Trans Women are not legally women under Equality Act. So continuing on with this article, quote, the landmark judgment which said that the legal definition of a woman is based on biological sex and is a blow to campaigners for transgender rights. It could have far-reaching consequences on the operation of single-sex services like domestic violence shelters, as well as equal pay claims. And it comes amidst an intense public debate over the intersection of transgender rights and women's rights, end quote. And so this is a little bit of like a, wait, what does this have to do with J.K. Rowling, right? Like, Leslie, this is general, like, legislative transphobia. Are we not seeing this happening in the States? Are we not seeing, like, people trying to make that happen in Canada as well? I'm pretty sure this isn't all that new, Leslie. Like, I keep up with the news. Yeah, you're right. It might not be all that new. And in fact, it might be a long time coming, as we've discussed many times on this show before. You know, we are in the pit of hell of fascism right now in the world. But One of the reasons why it is of a concern is because one of the most influential writers in the world, aka in this case J.K. Rowling, has been a strong proponent of anti-trans advocacy and activism for several years now. If you are not a frequent user on the internet, you have been spared, essentially, of knowing this information. If you, like me, however, grew up on Twitter, then you would know that beginning a few years ago, J.K. Rowling began to use her social media to essentially constantly cut down the experiences of oppression by transgender people. Oftentimes, usually, her victims were transgender women, but many times as well, they were about non-binary people and also transgender men. She became this like huge proponent of anti-trans rhetoric, constantly, in the very beginning, just simply alluding to the possibility and idea that cisgender women who were trans-exclusionary feminists were being oppressed by these over-concerned, confused transgender people who didn't respect cisgender women. Later on, it became more apparent and more clear that she actually had a huge problem with transgender people in general. She started hanging out with actual self-identified anti-trans activists, people who were proponents of the anti-gender ideology groups. Also hanging out with the actual self-identified fascists. So it became, you know, of a concern. After the UK Supreme Court's ruling that I mentioned earlier, J.K. Rowling legitimately, she didn't have to do this, but she did begin to openly celebrate the new legal definition of what constitutes a woman in the UK. She tweeted a photo of her holding a glass of wine, hanging out on some boat somewhere, and smoking a cigarette with the caption, "I love it when a plan comes together." You might be thinking, Leslie, that's just a coincidence. And I think you would be wrong. Personally, I think you're wrong. Because she, J.K. Rowling has, since she began showing her anti-trans beliefs, has been the subject of, like, countless, I am talking countless podcasts, video essays, web show docuseries, etc., about her personal political beliefs. People are defending her for having these pretty transphobic views. Some people are not defending her. Obviously, they are condemning her. But really importantly, what's to note is that whenever she is called out for her bigotry, J.K. Rowling doubles down. She began to double down so hard, in fact, that nobody would even have to tweet at her. Nobody would even have to, make any single blog post, internet post, anything like that about her. or even necessarily about transgender people in general, but she would find those posts and repost them, and she would be like, you said that you support inclusive spaces. Well, have you ever considered how some of these people are a threat to women, and very specifically biological women? And it's like, Joanne, nobody was talking to you. What are you doing? And I want to say, one of the huge reasons why I really, do not feel, personally, from what I have observed, what I have seen from Joanne, I do not feel that she is what she claims to be, which is that she is a supporter of women's rights, that she is a feminist. I feel that she isn't, because her brand of feminism really specifically is very restrictive. It is a bio-essentialist, gender essentialist view of what a woman is and what a woman does. Even though she might claim women can do anything, we can do anything we want, you know, we're going out there, we're earning our corn, we're earning our coin, and we're trying to be independent, you know, don't restrict us, that's misogyny. The sentiments agreed. The method, big disagree. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about that after this music break. Here is more music on this playlist in which we are saying, J.K. Rowling, you have some very questionable views that I don't agree with, and I'm condemning them right now. Here is Coming Down by Icon, Jackie Shane. Enjoy.
I'm coming down, 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 coming down with a heartache. I ain't sick, but I got a fever. Blood pressure running high. Pulse ain't right, I can't sleep at night. And here's the reason why. You ain't been around for a week or two. Said I ain't said I had, but I have. Coming down,
bird note. Birds' eggs are among nature's most elegant creations, but they're not easy to make. This American robin will lay one egg per day for 3 to 4 days. To make her eggs, the female robin has to use a great deal of calcium. But she can't just pour herself a nice big glass of milk. She has to find her calcium in nature. And it can be tough to find enough. But we can help. During the nesting season, we can give the birds that visit our homes some of that crucial calcium. Start off by putting calcium-enriched seed and suet in your bird feeders. For the many species that don't eat seed or suet, like robins, you can give them leftover chicken eggshells instead. Rinse the shells off in the sink, spread them out on a cookie sheet, and bake them in the oven at about 250 degrees for 10 minutes. You just want the shells to dry, not brown. When you're done, crush them up. Crushed eggshells can be mixed with bird seed and set out in a feeding tray or scattered right on the open ground. And remember, always wash your hands after handling raw eggs. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day. And you can get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at Bird Note Radio.
Stay of length and watch the days grow long, long for